1892. Greetings, Commander.
Identify, sir.
Well, let me open my mouth first.
No.
We've got these show-offs in the crowd. Yorgos Hatton. You want the full bit?
Yes.
No, all you want to know is that I come in service of God. Right. Only two. And once I began to understand that, I hope that all of you have had privy to yesterday's writing. We patiently wait for ones to come into some kind of understanding. And then when we are written to by, quote, well-known so-called channels, and we're told face-to-face what assholes we are, I'm sorry, it's getting old. I don't need to play those kinds of games. You don't have time for it. We're going to start rebutting them pretty bluntly. And yet we don't want to lose ones in those groups that can make a real contribution and have a right because they have been seeking truth. Our only hope is that ones will get the information, and very frequently when we publish something, it's not simply to retaliate to one named Barnaby, for instance. It is so that ones who go and hang on every word that this mouth says will be able to get both his projection as the most precious, one of the most precious masters of the Kohans, Lanto, he speaks for. And then someone he calls Elysian Dawn, whatever that may mean. As if I'm supposed to know or care about some energy picked out of the universal name list. Sananda responded. Thomas wrote. And yet I did make Dorma go through the exercise while I responded at the end of each paragraph, most all paragraphs. These are for you. I don't need to write that out for you. You have reached the level of discernment where you will either titter, discount, or unfortunately throw the letter out. We cannot allow ourselves just to throw it out because there are too many ones out there locked into the New Age movement, sucked into it because it was the only thing that was offered at the time that varied from the, quote, Christian indoctrination is being put forth by the Committee of 300, which we'll get possibly John to spend a little time with us a little bit later. I went ahead and had the meeting today, although I won't keep you 5 hours as I did last week. I hope all of you understand why I had to do that. You are set up. That poor child that came is right out of the New Age movement, a global government, one worlder. When she said that she spoke at the United Nations, it was a very insignificant speech, but it only projects her interest toward the one world idea. Because you see, that is a wondrous idea. Wouldn't it be nice if all of the world were unified and there could be peace? Well, that's what sucks everyone in. What you sees and what you get. And you have a very non-discerning little pawn being utilized by very sophisticated CIA to get at you ones. I cannot allow that to happen. I cannot even run the risk of that happening. Now, I'm going to have to tell you a little bit more about it. So please bear with me. It isn't of anything more than interest, the sidelight story of this romance that blossomed out of nowhere and into sudden romantic marriage. I ask her some questions because I wanted you to become discerning. You do not scramble jets from Nellis Field if you're flying out of Reno. It is totally impractical. Does that mean they were in Reno or were they in Las Vegas? That doesn't matter. I will also tell you that I don't even know what those little modified Lears cost. But I'm telling you, they are expensive, especially when they belong to the head of the CIA. And they have communications equipment in there until you cannot even walk in them. And yet their intercom didn't work. Precious ones, you've got to get discerning or you're going to get dead. You have to understand, discretion is going to be your shield. And some things are going to be opening up here right away that require absolute and total discretion, or you're going to get people killed. This is not a New Age group. I detest the term. New Age is something foisted off on the people by the Committee of 300 through their little subsidiary groupies, like the Club of Rome, the Trilateralists, the Bilderbergs. I don't need to write John's book. Thank God I don't even need to print it first so that ones will pay attention. And if it seems in your writings that Hatton may overdo it, what are you in the advertising for the Coleman material? You damn right. And you all better memorize it. It's your life. It's your nation. It is your soul. And I get very, very passionate about it. And you better get passionate about something. Now, it's going to dawn on you who I'm writing for. I am anonymous. I am whatever. And also anonymous. Also A. Those are well-known people. Actually, one is not. One filled in because the other one had to have some support. And it's going to hit some of you who have really studied your business and been around who that is. I don't want you to say it. If you contact anyone, contact someone near them. And just send them the information as I'm giving it out. Because I want the response to come back so that my scribe does not know who it is. The reason that I know that you will be finding out and hearing and put two and two together at some point is because I'm going to write the whole book. And before you're done with what's going on in your public view right now, it's going to slip and somebody is going to say the title of the book and you're going to put two and two together. And aha, I'm going to call everybody in the group and tell them. I don't care if you call somebody else in the group and tell them. I do not want you to call anyone in around this bookstore and tell them. Keep it quiet. I don't want anybody under interrogation by the Mossad, the CIA, or the KGB. So please understand that you're either going to be discreet or we will have to stop sharing. And this information I must share because that one is going to outlay, as will John, the Kissinger profile. And we're talking about Kissinger messing up the entire political situation in Chile this morning. We're talking about that. John will verify this. He's very, very busy in Moscow these days, setting up a branch of his own corporation. Anybody care to guess who they're going to choose for president of that corporation? So let us take this information. Let us make our own confirmations, and then let us, for goodness sakes, protect our brothers, because it's going to get, the circle is going to get expanded, and yet you are going to be mind-boggled at what's going to be happening. You see, the press is finally making Oliver Stone mad. If there is this big an effort to cover up a motion picture with possibilities, and ones like Dan Rather create and do whole new specials discounting this motion picture, there must be something Oliver is doing right. And the mere fact they are trying so hard to stop him from doing anything like the October surprise. Well, don't you think he may get really interested in doing the Bull Gright story? Don't you think he might just get interested, because I want every one of you, I believe it is on Tuesday night, one of your TV channels is going to air I Was Born on the 4th of July.
CBS.
Watch it. That is Ron Kovic. He is running for president. That is Oliver Stone's program. It's going to be imperative that you hook up these veterans. You cannot stay divided and win and create and move on as you must in a divided format. Take advantage of every opportunity. Every opportunity. Now, you have a situation with Gunther. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He was birthed into this kind of secret intelligence work. His own father was in the intelligence service of Germany. He is Bavarian. He was brought into the CIA at 17. He is best known amongst the CIA workers, comrades, if you will, as Robert Walker, Bob Walker. He has been sheep-dipped, total new identification, 35 times. Now, you met his sweet little love affair. Does that strike you as a logical liaison with a man with those credentials, that high, third ranking in the CIA? Just in your mind, answer that to yourself. Or do you think maybe she was set up, knowing full well that she has asked, "You think I was set up and they've tampered with me?" No, I don't think they've bothered to tamper with her. But she could represent a way into here. And I'm sorry for her. And I'm sorry for him, because he's trying now to play two sides against the middle. He's enjoyed his time and all of his experiences, and I want to tell you, I don't blame him. As a human being, he has had some extremely wondrous adventures, and that's addicting. That is as addicting as anything else that you can do, this living on the edge. And he's entangled in every major travel back and forth to Russia, to Moscow, setting up all of these things. He isn't locked away somewhere. He's in part of the time for his own security. He's out most of the time, but she doesn't know it. But he keeps running up bills, phone bills on her number of over $2,000 a month until she can't pay her bills. And I find that most interesting, since you're only allowed a few minutes on the telephone and they must be collect calls. So last week was an extremely important adventure for you ones. I don't even know whether or not you will hear from her again. Try to find out about ones. All you have to do is listen. You don't even need to prod. Because one such as this, when there is a mission involved, they will be nudged to keep contacting you. And you see, there had been no mention about her writing for Aton or anyone else until finally she realized that there was something going on here. And then suddenly she tells Oberle about having written for Aton, which infers that I still write for Aton. And that's exactly the way it was. I utilized her for a while. She is a very precious little individual, easily swayed, almost incredibly manipulative and manipulated. She is not nearly as sweet and innocent as she appears to be. Her line of contact, which she didn't realize, and this is not representative of a good operator. You don't blow it that bad. If you're going to infiltrate something, you better know your enemy. And she was so interested in her romance that she never bothered to find out about her enemy, which is representative of you. If she had bothered to find out, she would have known that Sister Thedra has worked for 2 years to discount this organization. And before that, I confronted Ann Valentin and Virginia Essenes head on in the living room. Well, I speak for Sananda. Oh, no, you don't. You get him right here, and I will speak with him. And it is amazing how far away Sananda becomes almost instantly. You see, it's very hard for that little black energy to raise its head when Sananda's standing right here by my right hand. And we're going to stop playing those games. But this was a guest in our house. And all you have to do is read the material that she offers against what you are producing, and you will see that there cannot ever be a meeting of the material. You have a new age channel from, I guess, the right side of the tracks, because I think we are considered the wrong side. Well, I'm going to keep my tracks, and anybody who wants to come with me, please hang in here, because it ain't going to be long now. And you bear with me, and you be patient, because old Hatton isn't very far away either. But we're not going to blow our thrust by doing the wrong thing to bring a little comfort to a few wandering ones. Truth will stand on its own merit. And you ones are going to have to bear with me while we try to counter some of these things, because to me, in the end, there is nothing important except you and my mission that says I will bring those ones of God of light home safely. And first we must express the word, and the word is being expressed as we reveal the lies. And it is not proper that God come give you the miracles and it be written across the sky. Man doesn't believe it. That is mysticism, and you want man to think, not live in another mystical fog bank of letters written across the sky or on a wall with no hand. Those are miracles. Those are tricks. I'm not saying that they didn't happen, but beware of who does the writing. If the truth is written there, it matters not who wrote it. Be discerning and know the difference in the purpose and in the importance. Not who wrote it, but is it or is it not truth? Because truth is what will stand, and that is what our mission is all about. And so our mission must be to work through the mental avenues of the human being. And this is why you keep bumping into yourself over and over. You get up in the morning and, well, my goodness, where did you come from? Aren't there more than 25 people in this world? You tell me there's 7 billion Hatton, and I keep running into the same old 25. That's right. If you can get those 25 headed in the right direction, all 7 billion will follow. But what John is laying out is not new information. It's old information. In fact, while we're writing, and I see it in John, who will listen? This has been around since, you know, the turn of the century, my goodness. Well, it's the time of hearing. A few brave souls took a very daring leap and somehow managed to get a couple of motion pictures made. And man begins to think because he can see. And then he'll research a little further because he doesn't want to be considered stupid, and he knows he's been had, and it's embarrassing. For a while, he will continue to play the game because it's more embarrassing to own up that you were had. But pretty soon, when everybody is speaking up, he'll get right on that track too, just fast as he can. Especially if he's being deprived of something else, like his welfare payment or his job. Obviously not in that order. George, introduce our friend here, and then I'll talk about that radio.
Bernard Bruger, who sponsored Desiree and I up in Calgary in Edmonton, is a translator in Canada. He speaks French and English, and he's going across Canada in different places and is reading our material and representing it, really motivated for doing it. And he's sitting right next to the commander at this minute.
Well, I wanted you all to acknowledge his presence. We're really very pleased to have him here. I have the same problem that all of you have. When we find our friends, we want to scoop them all in and say, how fast can you pack and get down here? so that you can be more confused about your purpose. And it's hard to be alone. And do you think it's hard to get your friends to listen? My goodness, how can you compete with a nude Diana, princess, in the tabloids? How can you possibly compete with the royal family of England in Canada, where the biggest thing on the agenda is to talk about the royal family and titter about it? Only when they really blow it and put as a joke Diana's head on a beautiful nude body, I want to tell you, Buckingham Palace fell apart. Yeah, I thought it was a very nice body, too. Well, yes, absolutely. But when it begins to really hurt on the toes and in the bellies, man will blink his eyes open. The return and the turnaround of this thing will be magnificently hard, even from this point, if you got it stopped today, because there's been such a thrust to get your industry out of here and pull it underground. It's not impossible.
Commander, there's some really strange things going on in Israel today, and John would like to speak about them.
I all right. Thank you. We'll get right on with that. I want to talk first about the radio signals. They're going to put in a system very similar to the one that they don't see any need for in Cuba anymore. It is a... And not that they're getting rid of the one in Cuba. Don't misunderstand. Don't be foolish. But in Cuba, they have a censoring system where I could whisper out her mouth here. And basically, those frequencies, if relayed properly, can be picked up in Cuba on that equipment. And their grid's in place. Remember that. They're going to put one in Mojave Desert. Now, talk about your bumble fingers. They have put up these other great dishes, etc. And they've had all the stars out like Spielberg. Mr. Spielberg has put $100,000 into this one going into the Mojave Desert. Pay attention, people. That's all I ask of you. They know this is our focus. As long as you stay within my shield, you are in the hand of God. You're going to have to learn to trust it. Outside that shield, your life isn't going to be worth anything. They can just explode you. They have that kind of capability now. Well, doesn't it help just to kind of rub elbows with us? You better believe it does. I'm not going to let one of those explosions happen in this room if I can avoid it. But ones who are actively working against us will come to be sorting themselves out pretty quick, because they're going to get the impact of the enemy's pulses. Because they will not have brought in their shield, and you see, they are just blanketing you. So I can only warn you about it. And yes, you have some incredibly interesting things going on. Israel, the Knesset, appears to be in a total state of disarray, with a vote of confidence coming up, with groups walking out. And John, I really would appreciate your speaking on it, and I want to thank you, and I did not speak with you personally about it. I'm utilizing some of your material to push your book. Please forgive me. Accept that I I have a reason for doing that.
Oh, I'm deeply honored, Commander, that you should deem me worthy of your attention. I'm deeply grateful to you.
Oh, come, John, please. I understand, and this man means it. We're just peers. Please understand, as we move into our job, we are peers. And we have great, great respect for each other. And I have humble respect for you ones to try and do this from Earth level. And yet that's where it must be done. So please share with us.
Thank you, Commander. May I come stand at the back of you?
Yes, please.
I don't like to put my back to an audience, although the best part of a donkey is its back. But I like to put a good face forward, sir. When I can see you all, that's when I'm happiest.
It's when you're safest, too.
Yes, I can see nobody sneaks up at the back of me. Commander, I'd like to just give you for your consideration this document that I prepared in 1989, which is coming to a head today in Jerusalem. And if Oberlee has a chance to look it over and deems it worthy to put in the Liberator, then I would consider it my contribution towards an understanding of the situation in the Middle East today.
If you feel it should be in there, get it in there. I wish we had a daily newspaper.
I think it contains very valuable information which will give you a clear understanding of how events have come to the place that they're at today. Some time ago, I mentioned the fact that there was a move afoot to get rid of Mr. Shamir, present Prime Minister of Israel, and replace him with Mr. Ariel Sharon, a former general in the Israeli military.
Gulp now. If Shamir is bad, I want to tell you, Sharon is just incredible.
Sharon is the man chosen by Alexander Haig to liaise with to invade Lebanon and kill 30,000 Lebanese citizens, using military equipment supplied courtesy of the United States of America. The key to this whole situation at the moment is a man by the name of Yuval Nieman. Now, Mr. Yuval Nieman wears several caps, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, he's part of the Palestinian Exploration Society, which is an archaeological society run by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II of England. And Mr. Yuval Nieman is a member of her committee of 300. And he's also an archaeologist of some note. He also happens to be the father of Israel's atomic bomb program. And he also happens to be a very astute politician. Now, Mr. Shamir has done his duty, he's done his work, but he's reached the point where he is no longer useful to the plotters. They have been for some time considering bringing General Sharon in, because he's far more ruthless, and when there's anybody who could start a war in the Middle East, that would certainly be General Sharon. So things have moved up to such a pitch that Mr. Yuval Nieman, when the time was right and he received word from his controllers in the Committee of 300, of which he is also a member, that they must act now, he precipitated the bringing down of Sharon's cabinet by walking out and taking with him the three votes of his party that would lead to the demise of the Likud party. What is behind all this? What is behind all this, ladies and gentlemen, is that the only way things are going to move up to finality in the Middle East is by means of an all-out war. And that is just about the situation that we've reached today. Israel is strong enough to mount an attack against all the Arab nations, with exception, perhaps, of Iran. Now, you may have noticed that Iran has been instrumental in releasing the American hostages, but there's a price to pay for that. And what you weren't told by the press, ladies and gentlemen, is that each time an American hostage was released, an enormous quantity of arms was turned over to Iraq. And I'm talking about all types of missiles, the very latest technology in smart bombs, everything you can imagine that the United States Army has. As part of the deal, each time a hostage was turned over, the United States Army in Europe, part of the NATO forces, flew these enormous consignments of weapons with galaxies and starlifters down to Tehran. That's finished now. That's all over with. Iran considers itself to be fully armed and ready to take on Israel. And you must never forget, ladies and gentlemen, that these games are played by individuals sitting up there who think and look upon us as mere puppets. And they pull the strings of both sides. They will pull the strings of the left side and the right side. Any war that we've been engaged in is their doing, and they've always set up both sides of the opposition and the counter forces. So they've set up Israel and they've set up Iran. Now they need a nice little wall to bring matters to a finality.
May I interrupt?
Certainly.
I don't know whether, frankly, whether you misspoke or whether you meant it. You said they were shipping these arms into Iraq.
Iran, I beg your pardon.
Thank you, because
I
was
that.
Having a little trouble myself.
No, that's obviously to Tehran in Iran.
Because they're also, keep in mind, friends, a lot of dollars, hard cash, is also being exchanged
exactly.
for these prisoners.
With the exchange of prisoners and the delivery of arms also went approximately $2 million in cash for each prisoner. Now, people say, well, that's American taxpayers' money wasted. No, it's not American taxpayers' money. It's money that's appropriated by the Congress and hidden in the budgets. And this is why we're having difficulty, ladies and gentlemen, in presenting our financial year 1992-93 budget. But I'm not going to get into that. I'll leave it to my very able friend, Mr. George Green, who's a specialist in economic matters, and he can perhaps tell you later on about that. My side is that I would like to explain that the war is inevitable. For once and for all, the Israelis are going to settle the hash of the Palestinians and all nations who oppose them, so that the plans for a greater Israel can now take place. And what is behind all this? It is to put the Israeli government, whatever that may be, and whatever individuals it may consist of, in charge of the Middle East oil supplies as surrogates for all the powers that are operating in the force in the world today. And remember, the European Economic Community is looked upon as a competitive entity by the United States of America. And we are at the position now where Europe is very soon going to be totally dependent on Middle East oil. And all wars are economic wars when you get right down to the bottom line. So what you have in creation at this very moment is a situation where you'll have one nation controlling vital Middle East oil supplies. And that nation will tell the European Economic Community nations, look here, boys, you better behave yourselves and do as you're told, because if you don't, you'll find yourselves without any oil. Now, we had an example of this a little while ago when the plan to attack Libya had to be shelved because the Italian government became intransigent and said, we cannot afford to risk our oil supplies from Libya, therefore we will not allow you to use our NATO bases to launch your attacks on Libya. They have received a few sharp raps over the knuckles, and the plan to attack Libya is still very much ongoing. It has not been scrapped. It has been shelved temporarily, but certainly not scrapped. Today you have the President of the United States beating the war drums, crying patriotism, trying to get the flags out and wave them around because he thinks it would be a good idea if we could go in there and finish Iraq off altogether, because he sees Iraq still as a thorn in the side for this plan that they're trying to bring to fruition, namely to put the Israeli government in charge of the oil supplies of the Middle East. Saddam Hussein is still considered a dangerous animal by the Bush administration, and naturally they're going to do everything they can to dispossess him of his country, which means that he will most likely end up like so many other leaders, and that is to be murdered. The situation is fraught with peril in the Middle East. If General Sharon should assume the leadership of the Israeli government and become the Prime Minister, then I would suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen, that based on information which I'm getting constantly, we could expect a war within a month, if not sooner.
Well, you have to, if we could just converse a little bit as we go along, please don't consider that I'm interrupting.
No, I don't.
There's a point here that you ones must keep in mind. This little group that we talk about in Israel, Sharon, Shamir, these were leaders, members of the terrorist group, the Stern group, the Stern gang. So you have a situation coming down here where Ariel Sharon is now the housing minister. He is the one building all that he can as fast as he can in the occupied territories. He is the villain at this point.
That's correct. They were all, of course, the Haganah and the Stern gangs, most of whom are in the parliament, or their descendants are in the Israeli Knesset parliament today, were set up by British intelligence, primarily by Captain Hill and by Sir William Stevenson. It was strictly a British intelligence operation, as was the Kennedy assassination. And I'll just like to touch on what you said, Commander, about the Kennedy assassination and Oliver Stone. Having witnessed the way in which the media is trying to take this man apart, and the very clever way in which the president of Time tried to make out that Stone was accusing him of faking the photograph, the notorious three photographs of Oswald holding an old Italian World War II rifle, I felt the time had come for me to break silence and drop him a note, and I gave Oberle a copy of that today, in which I disclosed that the photograph was not that of Oswald, because intelligence colleagues of mine and I examined the photographs many years ago, and we were looking for telltale signs, which you can see. And what we found was that the shadow on the face of Oswald came from a high sun, a noon sun, whereas the shadows on the ground pointed in a different direction, which led us to believe that this was taken at a time when the sun was low on the horizon. Now, I've offered that information to Oliver Stone in a letter which was mailed yesterday. And I also gave him a bit of information about the rifle that was used. The first three police officers, that was Craig, Boone, and Metzer, when they reached the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, what they saw was not this old Italian Mannlicher Concano World War II bolt action rifle, but they saw a very brand new modern Mauser. In fact, Craig, in his deposition, which was also sworn by Boone, said, "We found the rifle and it was stamped Mauser on the barrel." Now, I've done a bit of research into the Mauser rifle, because at one stage I became very interested in the Anglo-Boer War in 1899-1902, and apart from the courage of the Boers, who never at any time numbered more than 80,000 against Her Majesty's forces of 400,000, the pride of the British Army, when Britain was at the height of its imperialistic majesty, I found that in addition to the courage of the people and their determination to hang on to what was theirs, they also had the help from a very, very beautiful rifle made by the Mauser Company in Germany, which could outshoot the British Lee Metford rifle by about 600 yards. So I took an interest. I went to every Boer War Museum in South Africa. I toured the country. I studied for a long time in the archives in Pretoria and a place called Bloemfontein, and of course in London as well, in the war archives on the British war against the Boers in 1899. And I came to the conclusion that the damage done by the shots that hit Kennedy were exactly the type of wounds that were inflicted on the British soldiers by the Mausers in the hands of the Boers. And I've offered that information to Mr. Stone in the hope that it would help him. I told him I do not seek publicity. In fact, publicity could be very bad for my health. And so I just mention that in passing, because I think it's important for us to know that this man has done a signally great job, and obviously every attempt will be made to keep the cover-up in place.
Well, I assume, too, that you mentioned the fact that there were more than one Oswald.
Oh, yes, I did. I mentioned the fact that there were three.
There were several Oswalds running around.
Yes, there were three. And I told him about the photograph, that when we three were investigating it, we used our intelligence equipment and we blew up the photographs, and we noticed immediately that this was not Lee Harvey Oswald at all, because Lee Harvey Oswald had a pointed chin with a distinct cleft in it, whereas the man in the photograph had a rounded chin and there was no sign of a cleft at all. And then we also got photos taken up by the CIA of alleged Lee Harvey Oswald entering the Cuban embassy in Mexico, and we compared the two, and lo and behold, this Oswald in the now famous photograph published in Life was the same guy who was entering the Cuban embassy in Mexico City when Oswald was known to be in New Orleans. So these are things that I've offered my services to Oliver Stone, and in the hope too that he will also make use of them to bring Colonel Bogratz into the scene, and that somehow or other we'll be able to make a contribution towards the well-being of these beloved United States of America. To get back to the to what's happening in Israel, I wrote that paper there called A Conspiracy to Create a Holy War, and how the plans were laid down to get a furor going over the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, which is supposed to be the site of Solomon's Temple.
Greetings, Commander.
Identify, sir.
Well, let me open my mouth first.
No.
We've got these show-offs in the crowd. Yorgos Hatton. You want the full bit?
Yes.
No, all you want to know is that I come in service of God.
Right.
Only two. And once I began to understand that, I hope that all of you have had privy to yesterday's writing. We patiently wait for ones to come into some kind of understanding. And then when we are written to by, quote, well-known so-called channels, and we're told face-to-face what assholes we are, I'm sorry, it's getting old. I don't need to play those kinds of games. You don't have time for it. We're going to start rebutting them pretty bluntly. And yet we don't want to lose ones in those groups that can make a real contribution and have a right because they have been seeking truth. Our only hope is that ones will get the information, and very frequently when we publish something, it's not simply to retaliate to one named Barnaby, for instance. It is so that ones who go and hang on every word that this mouth says will be able to get both his projection as the most precious, one of the most precious masters of the Kohans, Lanto, he speaks for. And then someone he calls Elysian Dawn, whatever that may mean. As if I'm supposed to know or care about some energy picked out of the universal name list. Sananda responded, Thomas wrote, and yet I did make Dorma go through the exercise while I responded at the end of each paragraph, most all paragraphs. These are for you. I don't need to write that out for you. You have reached the level of discernment where you will either titter, discount, or unfortunately throw the letter out. We cannot allow ourselves just to throw it out because there are too many ones out there locked into the New Age movement, sucked into it because it was the only thing that was offered at the time that varied from the, quote, Christian indoctrination is being put forth by the Committee of 300, which we'll get possibly John to spend a little time with us a little bit later. I went ahead and had the meeting today, although I won't keep you 5 hours as I did last week. I hope all of you understand why I had to do that. You are set up That poor child that came is right out of the New Age movement, a global government, one worlder. When she said that she spoke at the United Nations, it was a very insignificant speech, but it only projects her interest toward the one world idea. Because you see, that is a wondrous idea. Wouldn't it be nice if all of the world were unified and there could be peace? Well, that's what sucks everyone in. What you sees and what you get. And you have a very non-discerning little pawn being utilized by a very sophisticated CIA to get at you ones. I cannot allow that to happen. I cannot even run the risk of that happening. Now I'm going to have to tell you a little bit more about it. So please bear with me. It isn't of anything more than interest, the sidelight story of this romance that blossomed out of nowhere and into sudden romantic marriage. I asked her some questions because I wanted you to become discerning. You do not scramble jets from Nellis Field if you're flying out of Reno. It is totally impractical. Does that mean they were in Reno or were they in Las Vegas? That doesn't matter. I will also tell you that I don't even know what those little modified Lears cost. But I'm telling you, they are expensive, especially when they belong to the head of the CIA. And they have communications equipment in there until you cannot even walk in them. And yet their intercom didn't work. Precious ones, you've got to get discerning or you're going to get dead. You have to understand, discretion is going to be your shield. And some things are going to be opening up here right away that require absolute and total discretion, or you're going to get people killed. This is not a New Age group. I detest the term. New Age is something foisted off on the people by the Committee of 300 through their little subsidiary groupies like the Club of Rome, the Trilateralists, the Bilderbergs. I don't need to write John's book. Thank God I don't even need to print it first so that ones will pay attention. And if it seems in your writings that Hatton may overdo it, what are you in the advertising for the Coleman material? You damn right. And you all better memorize it. It's your life. It's your nation. It is your soul. And I get very, very passionate about it. And you better get passionate about something. Now, it's going to dawn on you who I'm writing for. I am anonymous. I am whatever. And also anonymous. Also A. Those are well-known people. Actually, one is not. One filled in because the other one had to have some support. And it's going to hit some of you who have really studied your business and been around who that is. I don't want you to say it. If you contact anyone, contact someone near them. And just send them the information as I'm giving it out. because I want the response to come back so that my scribe does not know who it is. The reason that I know that you will be finding out and hearing and put two and two together at some point is because I'm going to write the whole book. And before you're done with what's going on in your public view right now, it's going to slip and somebody is going to say the title of the book and you're going to put two and two together. And aha, I'm going to call everybody in the group and tell them. I don't care if you call somebody else in the group and tell them. I do not want you to call anyone in around this bookstore and tell them. Keep it quiet. I don't want anybody under interrogation by the Mossad, the CIA, or the KGB. So please understand that you're either going to be discreet or we will have to stop sharing. And this information I must share because that one is going to outlay, as will John, the Kissinger profile. And we're talking about Kissinger messing up the entire political situation in Chile this morning. We're talking about that. John will verify this. He's very, very busy in Moscow these days, setting up a branch of his own corporation. Anybody care to guess who they're going to choose for president of that corporation? So let us take this information. Let us make our own confirmations, and then let us, for goodness sakes, protect our brothers, because it's going to get, the circle is going to get expanded, and yet you are going to be mind-boggled at what's going to be happening. You see, the press is finally making Oliver Stone mad. If there is this big an effort to cover up a motion picture with possibilities, and ones like Dan Rather create and do whole new specials discounting this motion picture, there must be something Oliver is doing right. And the mere fact they are trying so hard to stop him from doing anything like the October surprise. Well, don't you think he may get really interested in doing the Bull Gright story? Don't you think he might just get interested, because I want every one of you, I believe it is on Tuesday night, one of your TV channels is going to air, I Was Born on the 4th of July.
CBS.
Watch it. That is Ron Kovic. He is running for president. That is Oliver Stone's program. It's going to be imperative that you hook up these veterans. You cannot stay divided and win and create and move on as you must in a divided format. Take advantage of every opportunity. Every opportunity. Now, you have a situation with Gunther. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He was birthed into this kind of secret intelligence work. His own father was in the intelligence service of Germany. He is Bavarian. He was brought into the CIA at 17. He is best known amongst the CIA workers, comrades, if you will, as Robert Walker, Bob Walker. He has been sheep-dipped, total new identification, 35 times. Now you met his sweet little love affair. Does that strike you as a logical liaison with a man with those credentials, that high, third ranking in the CIA? Just in your mind, answer that to yourself. Or do you think maybe she was set up, knowing full well that she has asked, "You think I was set up and they've tampered with me?" No, I don't think they've bothered to tamper with her. But she could represent a way into here. And I'm sorry for her. And I'm sorry for him, because he's trying now to play two sides against the middle. He's enjoyed his time and all of his experiences, and I want to tell you, I don't blame him. As a human being, he has had some extremely wondrous adventures. And that's addicting. That is as addicting as anything else that you can do, this living on the edge. And he's entangled in every major travel back and forth to Russia, to Moscow, setting up all of these things. He isn't locked away somewhere. He's in part of the time for his own security. He's out most of the time, but she doesn't know it. But he keeps running up bills, phone bills on her number of over $2,000 a month until she can't pay her bills. And I find that most interesting, since you're only allowed a few minutes on the telephone and they must be collect calls. So last week was an extremely important adventure for you ones. I don't even know whether or not you will hear from her again. Try to find out about ones. All you have to do is listen. You don't even need to prod. Because one such as this, when there is a mission involved, they will be nudged to keep contacting you. And you see, there had been no mention about her writing for Aton or anyone else until finally she realized that there was something going on here. And then suddenly she tells Oberle about having written for Aton, which infers that I still write for Aton. And that's exactly the way it was. I utilized her for a while. She is a very precious little individual, easily swayed, almost incredibly manipulative and manipulated. She is not nearly as sweet and innocent as she appears to be. Her line of contact, which she didn't realize, and this is not representative of a good operator. You don't blow it that bad. If you're going to infiltrate something, you better know your enemy. And she was so interested in her romance that she never bothered to find out about her enemy, which is representative of you. If she had bothered to find out, she would have known that Sister Thedra has worked for 2 years to discount this organization. And before that, I confronted Ann Valentin and Virginia Essenes head on in the living room. Well, I speak for Sananda. Oh, no, you don't. you get him right here, and I will speak with him. And it is amazing how far away Sananda becomes almost instantly. You see, it's very hard for that little black energy to raise its head when Sananda's standing right here by my right hand. And we're going to stop playing those games. But this was a guest in our house. And all you have to do is read the material that she offers against what you are producing, and you will see that there cannot ever be a meeting of the material. You have a new age channel from, I guess, the right side of the tracks, because I think we are considered the wrong side. Well, I'm going to keep my tracks, and anybody who wants to come with me, please hang in here, because it ain't going to be long now. And you bear with me, and you be patient, because old Hatton isn't very far away either. But we're not going to blow our thrust by doing the wrong thing to bring a little comfort to a few wandering ones. Truth will stand on its own merit. And you ones are going to have to bear with me while we try to counter some of these things, because to me, in the end, there is nothing important except you. And my mission that says I will bring those ones of God of light home safely. And first we must express the word. And the word is being expressed as we reveal the lies. And it is not proper that God come give you the miracles and it be written across the sky. Man doesn't believe it. That is mysticism, and you want man to think, not live in another mystical fog bank of letters written across the sky or on a wall with no hand. Those are miracles. Those are tricks. I'm not saying that they didn't happen, but beware of who does the writing. If the truth is written there, it matters not who wrote it. Be discerning and know the difference in the purpose and in the importance. Not who wrote it, but is it or is it not truth? Because truth is what will stand, and that is what our mission is all about. And so our mission must be to work through the mental avenues of the human being. And this is why you keep bumping into yourself over and over. You get up in the morning and, well, my goodness, where did you come from? Aren't there more than 25 people in this world? You tell me there's 7 billion, Hatton, and I keep running into the same old 25. That's right. If you can get those 25 headed in the right direction, all 7 billion will follow. But what John is laying out is not new information. It's old information. In fact, while we're writing, and I see it in John, who will listen? This has been around since, you know, the turn of the century, my goodness. Well, it's the time of hearing. A few brave souls took a very daring leap and somehow managed to get a couple of motion pictures made. And man begins to think, because he can see And then he'll research a little further, because he doesn't want to be considered stupid, and he knows he's been had, and it's embarrassing. For a while, he will continue to play the game because it's more embarrassing to own up that you were had. But pretty soon, when everybody is speaking up, he'll get right on that track too, as fast as he can. Especially if he's being deprived of something else, like his welfare payments or his job. Obviously not in that order. George, introduce our friend here. And then I'll talk about that radio.
Bernard Brueger, who sponsored Desiree and I up in Calgary in Edmonton, is a translator in Canada. He speaks French and English. And he's going across Canada in different places and is reading our material and representing it, really motivated for doing it. And he's sitting right next to the commander at this minute.
Well, I wanted you all to acknowledge his presence. We're really very pleased to have him here. I have the same problem that all of you have. When we find our friends, we want to scoop them all in and say, how fast can you pack and get down here? So that you can be more confused about your purpose. And it's hard to be alone. And you think it's hard to get your friends to listen? My goodness, how can you compete with a nude Diane? Diana, princess? In the tabloids. How can you possibly compete with the royal family of England in Canada, where the biggest thing on the agenda is to talk about the royal family and titter about it? Only when they really blow it and put as a joke Diana's head on a beautiful nude body, I want to tell you, Buckingham Palace fell apart. Yeah, I thought it was a very nice body, too. Well, yes, absolutely. But when it begins to really hurt on the toes and in the bellies, man will blink his eyes open. The return and the turnaround of this thing will be magnificently hard, even from this point, if you got it stopped today, because there's been such a thrust to get your industry out of here and pull it underground. It's not impossible.
Commander, there's some really strange things going on in Israel today, and John would like to speak about them.
All right. Thank you. We'll get right on with that. I want to talk first about the radio signals. They're going to put in a system very similar to the one that they don't see any need for in Cuba anymore. It is a... And not that they're getting rid of the one in Cuba. Don't misunderstand. Don't be foolish. But in Cuba, they have a censoring system where I could whisper out her mouth here. And basically, those frequencies, if relayed properly, can be picked up in Cuba on that equipment. And their grid's in place. Remember that. They're going to put one in Mojave Desert. Now, talk about your bumble fingers. They have put up these other great dishes, etc. And they've had all the stars out like Spielberg. Mr. Spielberg has put $100,000 into this one going into the Mojave Desert. Pay attention, people. That's all I ask of you. They know this is our focus. As long as you stay within my shield, you are in the hand of God. You're going to have to learn to trust it. Outside that shield, your life isn't going to be worth anything. They can just explode you. They have that kind of capability now. Well, doesn't it help just to kind of rub elbows with us? You better believe it does. I'm not going to let one of those explosions happen in this room if I can avoid it. But ones who are actively working against us will come to be sorting themselves out pretty quick, because they're going to get the impact of the enemy's pulses, because they will not have brought in their shield, and you see they are just blanketing you. So I can only warn you about it. And yes, you have some incredibly interesting things going on. Israel, the Knesset appears to be in a total state of disarray, with a vote of confidence coming up, with groups walking out. And John, I really would appreciate your speaking on it, and I want to thank you, and I did not speak with you personally about it. I'm utilizing some of your material to push your book. Please forgive me. Accept that I have a reason for doing that.
Oh, I'm deeply honored, Commander, that you should deem me worthy of your attention. I'm deeply grateful to you.
Oh, come, John, please. I understand, and this man means it. We're just peers. Please understand, as we move into our job, we are peers. And we have great, great respect for each other. And I have humble respect for you ones to try and do this from earth level. And yet that's where it must be done. So please share with us.
Thank you, Commander. May I come stand at the back of you?
Yes, please.
I don't like to put my back to an audience, although the best part of a donkey is its back. But I like to put a good face forward, so when I can see you all, that's when I'm happiest.
When you're safest, like to, too.
Yes, I can see nobody sneaks up at the back of me. Commander, I'd like to just give you for your consideration this document that I prepared in 1989, which is coming to a head today in Jerusalem. And if Oberly has a chance to look it over and deems it worthy to put in the Liberator, then I would consider it my contribution towards an understanding of the situation in the Middle East today.
If you feel it should be in there, get it in there.
I
wish we had a daily newspaper.
I think it contains very valuable information which will give you a clear understanding of how events have come to the place that they're at today. Some time ago, I mentioned the fact that there was a move afoot to get rid of Mr. Shamir, present Prime Minister of Israel, and replace him with Mr. Ariel Sharon, a former general in the Israeli military.
Gulp now. If Shamir is bad, I want to tell you, Sharon is just incredible.
Sharon is the man chosen by Alexander Haig to liaise with to invade Lebanon and kill 30,000 Lebanese citizens using military equipment supplied courtesy of the United States of America. The key to this whole situation at the moment is a man by the name of Yuval Nieman. Now, Mr. Yuval Nieman wears several caps, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, he's part of the Palestinian Exploration Society, which is an archaeological society run by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II of England. And Mr. Yuval Nieman is a member of her Committee of 300. And he's also an archaeologist of some note. He also happens to be the father of Israel's atomic bomb program. And he also happens to be a very astute politician. Now, Mr. Shamir has done his duty, he's done his work, but he's reached the point where he is no longer useful to the plotters. They have been for some time considering bringing General Sharon in because he's far more ruthless. And when there's anybody who could start a war in the Middle East, that would certainly be General Sharon. So things have moved up to such a pitch that Mr. Yuval Neiman, when the time was right and he received word from his controllers in the Committee of 300, of which he is also a member, that they must act now, he precipitated the bringing down of Sharon's cabinet by walking out and taking with him the three votes of his party that would lead to the demise of the Likud party. What is behind all this? What is behind all this, ladies and gentlemen, is that the only way things are going to move up to finality in the Middle East is by means of an all-out war. And that is just about the situation that we've reached today. Israel is strong enough to mount an attack against all the Arab nations, with exception perhaps of Iran. Now, you may have noticed that Iran has been instrumental in releasing the American hostages, but there's a price to pay for that. And what you weren't told by the press, ladies and gentlemen, is that each time an American hostage was released, an enormous quantity of arms was turned over to Iraq. And I'm talking about all types of missiles, the very latest technology in smart bombs, everything you can imagine that the United States Army has. As part of the deal, each time a hostage was turned over, the United States Army in Europe, part of the NATO forces, flew these enormous consignments of weapons with Galaxies and Starlifters down to Tehran. That's finished now. That's all over with. Iran considers itself to be fully armed and ready to take on Israel. And you must never forget, ladies and gentlemen, that these games are played by individuals sitting up there who think and look upon us as mere puppets. And they pull the strings of both sides. They will pull the strings of the left side and the right side. Any war that we've been engaged in is their doing, and they've always set up both sides of the opposition and the counter forces. So they've set up Israel and they've set up Iran. Now they need a nice little wall to bring matters to a finality.
May I interrupt?
Certainly.
I don't know whether, frankly, whether you misspoke or whether you meant it. You said they were shipping these arms into Iraq.
Iran, I beg your pardon.
Thank you, because
I
was
that.
Having a little trouble myself.
No, that's obviously to Tehran in Iran.
Because they're also, keep in mind, friends, a lot of dollars, hard cash, is also being exchanged
exactly.
for these prisoners.
With the exchange of prisoners and the delivery of arms also went approximately $2 million in cash for each prisoner. Now, people say, well, that's American taxpayers' money wasted. No, it's not American taxpayers' money. It's money that's appropriated by the Congress and hidden in the budgets. And this is why we're having difficulty, ladies and gentlemen, in presenting our financial year 1992-93 budget. But I'm not going to get into that. I'll leave it to my very able friend, Mr. George Green, who's a specialist in economic matters, and he can perhaps tell you later on about that. My side is that I would like to explain that the war is inevitable. For once and for all, the Israelis are going to settle the hash of the Palestinians and all nations who oppose them, so that the plans for a greater Israel can now take place. And what is behind all this? It is to put the Israeli government, whatever that may be, and whatever individuals it may consist of, in charge of the Middle East oil supplies as surrogates for all the powers that are operating in the force in the world today. And remember, the European Economic Community is looked upon as a competitive entity by the United States of America. And we are at the position now where Europe is very soon going to be totally dependent on Middle East oil. And all wars are economic wars when you get right down to the bottom line. So what you have in creation at this very moment is a situation where you'll have one nation controlling vital Middle East oil supplies. And that nation will tell the European Economic Community nations, look here, boys, you better behave yourselves and do as you're told, because if you don't, you'll find yourselves without any oil. Now, we had an example of this a little while ago when the plan to attack Libya had to be shelved because the Italian government became intransigent and said, we cannot afford to risk our oil supplies from Libya, therefore we will not allow you to use our NATO bases to launch your attacks on Libya. They have received a few sharp raps over the knuckles, and the plan to attack Libya is still very much ongoing. It has not been scrapped. It has been shelved temporarily, but certainly not scrapped. Today you have the President of the United States beating the war drums, crying patriotism, trying to get the flags out and wave them around because he thinks it would be a good idea if we could go in there and finish Iraq off altogether, because he sees Iraq still as a thorn in the side for this plan that they're trying to bring to fruition, namely to put the Israeli government in charge of the oil supplies of the Middle East. Saddam Hussein is still considered a dangerous animal by the Bush administration, and naturally they're going to do everything they can to dispossess him of his country, which means that he will most likely end up like so many other leaders, and that is to be murdered. The situation is fraught with peril in the Middle East. If General Sharon should assume the leadership of the Israeli government and become the Prime Minister, then I would suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen, that based on information which I'm getting constantly, we could expect a war within a month, if not sooner.
Well, you have to, if we could just converse a little bit as we go along, please don't consider that I'm interrupting.
No,
but
I don't.
There's a point here that you ones must keep in mind. This little group that we talk about in Israel, Sharon, Shamir, these were leaders, members of the terrorist group, Stern group, the Stern gang. So you have a situation coming down here where Ariel Sharon is now the housing minister. He is the one building all that he can as fast as he can in the occupied territories. He is the villain at this point.
That's correct. They were all, of course, the Haganah and the Stern gangs, most of whom are in the parliament, or their descendants are in the Israeli Knesset parliament today, were set up by British intelligence, primarily by Captain Hill and by Sir William Stevenson. It was strictly a British intelligence operation, as was the Kennedy assassination. And I'll just like to touch on what you said, Commander, about the Kennedy assassination and Oliver Stone. Having witnessed the way in which the media is trying to take this man apart, and the very clever way in which the president of Time tried to make out that Stone was accusing him of faking the photograph, the notorious three photographs of Oswald holding an old Italian World War II rifle, I felt the time had come for me to break silence and drop him a note, and I gave Oberle a copy of that today, in which I disclosed that the photograph was not that of Oswald, because intelligence colleagues of mine and I examined the photographs many years ago, and we were looking for telltale signs, which you can see. And what we found was that the shadow on the face of Oswald came from a high sun, a noon sun, whereas the shadows on the ground pointed in a different direction, which led us to believe that this was taken at a time when the sun was low on the horizon. Now, I've offered that information to Oliver Stone in a letter which was mailed yesterday. And I also gave him a bit of information about the rifle that was used. The first three police officers, that was Craig, Boone, and Metzer, when they reached the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, what they saw was not this old Italian Mannlicher Concano World War II bolt-action rifle, but they saw a very brand new modern Mauser. In fact, Craig, in his deposition, which was also sworn by Boone, said, we found the rifle and it was stamped Mauser on the barrel. Now, I've done a bit of research into the Mauser rifle because at one stage I became very interested in the Anglo-Boer War in 1899 to 1902, and apart from the courage of the Boers, who never at any time numbered more than 80,000 against Her Majesty's forces of 400,000, the pride of the British Army, when Britain was at the height of its imperialistic majesty. I found that in addition to the courage of the people and their determination to hang on to what was theirs, they also had the help from a very, very beautiful rifle made by the Mauser Company in Germany, which could outshoot the British Lee Metford rifle by about 600 yards. So I took an interest. I went to every Boer War Museum in South Africa. I toured the country. I studied for a long time in the archives in Pretoria and a place called Bloemfontein, and of course in London as well, in the war archives on the British war against the Boers in 1899. And I came to the conclusion that the damage done by the shots that hit Kennedy were exactly the type of wounds that were inflicted on the British soldiers by the Mausers in the hands of the Boers. And I've offered that information to Mr. Stone in the hope that it would help him. I told him I do not seek publicity. In fact, publicity could be very bad for my health. And so I just mentioned that in passing, because I think it's important for us to know that this man has done a signally great job, and obviously every attempt will be made to keep the cover-up in place.
Well, I assume, too, that you mentioned the fact that there were more than one Oswald.
Oh, yes, I did. I mentioned the fact that there were three.
There were several Oswalds running around.
Yes, there were three, and I told him about the photograph that when we three were investigating it, we used our intelligence equipment and we blew up the photographs, and we noticed immediately that this was not Lee Harvey Oswald at all, because Lee Harvey Oswald had a pointed chin with a distinct cleft in it, whereas the man in the photograph had a rounded chin and there was no sign of a cleft at all. And then we also got photos taken up by the CIA of alleged Lee Harvey Oswald entering the Cuban embassy in Mexico, and we compared the two, and lo and behold, this Oswald in the now famous photograph published in Life was the same guy who was entering the Cuban embassy in Mexico City when Oswald was known to be in New Orleans. So these are things that I've offered my services to Oliver Stone, and in the hope too that he will also make use of them to bring Colonel Bogratz into the scene, and that somehow or other we'll be able to make a contribution towards the well-being of these beloved United States of America. To get back to to what's happening in Israel, I wrote that paper there called A Conspiracy to Create a Holy War, and how the plans were laid down to get a furor going over the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, which is supposed to be the site of Solomon's Temple.
Excuse me, John.
Certainly.